In this episode of Industrial Industries World Radio, you are definitely going to enjoy this episode as we take a look at the world's most popular soft drink, Coca-Cola, figure out where it all started from and how it came to be a worldwide favorite.
Go hard or go home. You are listening to Industrial Industries World Radio with your host, the ultimate party DJ, DJ Glowing Ice, for an episode of Industrial Industries World Radio. Show me what you got, DJ.
Hey yo, what's up everybody? Welcome to another fun-filled episode of Industrial Industries World Radio. I am your host, DJ Glowing Ice, and we're gonna have fun today because we're tackling a big, big brand in America and the world. We are talking all about Coca-Cola. The soda, the drink, enjoy Coca-Cola. Everybody knows what Coca-Cola is. The Coke bottle, the red. Anytime you see Coke, you always think of red, as their cans are always colored red, and so on and so forth. So we're going to dig deep into the history of Coca-Cola, starting with the man who created it, came up with the syrup in the 1800s. We're going to go through all of the flavors of Coca-Cola, the brands they have, some fun facts, just anything and everything you've ever wanted to know about Coca-Cola. I was always a big fan of Coca-Cola. Loved Cherry Coke. One of my biggest memories of Coca-Cola was I was in Florida. I was 7 years old, and I had a glass bottle of Coca-Cola for the first time. And I remember drinking it as I was just walking the streets of Florida with my family. Yeah, that's just one memory out of the many that I can recall. Drinking Coca-Cola, but it's probably one of the more vivid ones. But yeah, Coca-Cola's always been a part of my life, and I'm sure it's been a part of yours in some way, shape, or form. It's all good, and it's all fun, and we're going to get into Coca-Cola in just a little bit. This is episode 26 of Industrial Industries World Radio, and now let's get into past, present, future.
Past, present, future.
Today is April 13th, and it's National Peach Cobbler Day. So, you know, get yourself a little scoop of vanilla ice cream and put it on top there. And, ooh, you know, some fresh spring peaches. You got yourself a little combo there, huh? In the past, on this day in 1111, Henry V is crowned Holy Roman Emperor. Presently, I'm going to drink a can of Coca-Cola right now. So, here we go. Oh yeah, that's good. As the forecast calls for partly cloudy skies with a high of 48 degrees in the small town region. And in the future, biomedical gerontologist Aubrey de Grey, he predicts that there's going to be a 50-50 chance in 2036 where aging will be able to be controlled medically, which will lead to humans eventually being immortal, which is pretty cool. April 13th is the 104th day of the year, and there are 262 days left for the year 2020. Celebrity birthdays for today, we have American President Thomas Jefferson. He was born on this day in 1743. American businessman Frank Woolworth was born on this day in 1852. And actor Tony Dow, who played the Beaver's older brother Wally in the TV show Leave It to Beaver, he's 74 years old today. And if it's your birthday, I'm going to have a swig of Coke for you right now, wishing you a very, very happy birthday. So here's to you if it's your birthday today. Ah, man, there's nothing better than an ice cold Coca-Cola. And this past, present, and future, it's brought to you by the Small Town Spring Clean Rummage Sale. It's happening this weekend on Saturday starting at 6 a.m. until whenever. And right now, they are in need of volunteers to help set up and price everything from baby clothes to old television sets. So if you are interested in volunteering, make sure to contact Gail at Small Town City Hall to sign up for this great cause. And if you're ready to have a rummaging of a good time, make sure to swing by the square from 6 a.m. to whenever this Saturday. It's the Small Town Spring Clean Rummage Sale this Saturday in the town square in Small Town, USA.
Industrial Industries World Radio.
All right, now's the time where we're going to dig deep into the subject. Now we're going to learn all about Coca-Cola. I was shocked. You know, I was never a Coca-Cola expert on a lot of things, but just knowing the gist of what Coca-Cola is, what the company is, who they own, all of that. And as I dug deep into Coca-Cola's past, I found some things that truly shocked me. And I know it's going to shock you too. Strap in your seatbelt, crack open an ice cold Coca-Cola, and let's get into the history of Coca-Cola. The history of Coca-Cola is filled with war and drugs and everything else that makes a good story a good story. So let's take a look at the guy who created Coca-Cola. What was his life like? Where did he grow up? Let's check it out. Coca-Cola was created by a biochemist and a pharmacist named John Stith Pemberton. John was born on July 8, 1831 in Knoxville, Georgia, to father James Clifford Pemberton and mother Martha L. Gant. He spent most of his childhood in Rome, Georgia, which was a brand new city over what was Cherokee territory, full of hills from the Appalachian terrain. And as a teenager going to college, John attended college at the now defunct Reform Medical College of Georgia in Macon, Georgia. He took courses in medicine and pharmacy and was trained to become a steam doctor. Now, a steam doctor is something we have no idea what a steam doctor is. But back then, it was a profession. It's now obsolete. But it was created by a doctor and herbalist in Massachusetts named Samuel Thompson. And being what would be called a steam doctor, you would be following something called the Thompsonian system, which was based on believing that herbal treatments and steam baths would rid patients of illnesses and diseases. Being a steam doctor was a profession that a lot of other doctors looked at and looked down on more than anything. And there was a lot of controversy with the person who created the system, nevertheless. So anyways, this was what John Pemberton started out as a steam doctor. And he graduated college at 19 years old in 1850, and then he later on sought a higher medical education to acquire a pharmaceutical degree. So in the early years of 1850, fresh out of college, John opened a medicinal and surgery practice in Rome, Georgia. And throughout this time, while having a practice, he met a woman by the name of Anne Eliza Clifford Lewis in Columbus, Georgia. And by 1853, they were married and had moved to Columbus, Georgia. So he got into being a seller making raw materials in this lab in his pharmacy to sell to other pharmacies as well. So with the laboratory and claiming to be able to make any pharmaceutical material or chemical, he became known as the be-all medicine man. And in 1854, John and Anne had a son, their only child, Charles Ney Pemberton. Throughout the rest of the 1850s and into the early 1860s, John, he continued to work as a pharmacist and a medicine distributor. Then May 1862, with the American Civil War breaking out, John, living in Georgia, which was a state that was in the Confederate States of America, he enlisted to fight with the Confederacy, serving as first lieutenant in the Confederate Army. Throughout 1862 and 1864, in the defense of Columbus, Georgia, he organized the 3rd Georgia Cavalry Battalion, and he was given rank as Lieutenant Colonel in the Confederate States Army. And then on the fateful day, Easter Sunday, April 1865, it's what triggered the events that led to the creation of Coca-Cola. Now, not right away, but this is the big thing that made everything fall. This was the domino effect. And this was the day when the Battle of Columbus happened. Union General James Wilson, he led his troops to fight against the Confederacy, and John Pemberton, who was on the Confederate side, he was on the front lines, and he wound up being wounded by being shot and taking a saber wound, getting slashed across his chest. After the battle, like most wounded Civil War soldiers, morphine became the drug of choice to deal with pain during the healing process. And with morphine being a highly addictive drug, John became addicted. 1866, with the American Civil War over, John Pemberton was looking for a way to cure himself of the morphine addiction, so he formed a partnership with a wealthy Columbus physician, Dr. Austin Walker. Now, during the mid to late 1860s, home remedies and tonics, they were in huge demand, very popular. John put all of his money into expanding his labs for researching and developing items from botanical medicines to photography supplies to even lines of perfume. And he had one specifically called Sweet Southern Bouquet. So he was a jack of all trades, making all kinds of stuff. And he started forming up this company, making all kinds of things, and he called it the J.S. Pemberton Company. Now, during this time, he was very successful. He was distributing all these remedies to pharmacies in the area, to even places in Atlanta, such as Jacob's Pharmacy. John Pemberton kind of became the guy to go to. Like, a lot of importers would get their goods in, and they would take it to John's lab to test and make sure everything was good. And John, back then, with his lab, he had methods and ways of testing things, making sure everything was in order. Some of these methods are still in use today with product testing. I mean, that's just how good it was. Now, John, being addicted to morphine, he was on the hunt to find a cure to rid his addiction. So he started experimenting with this active ingredient from a plant called the buttonbush. It's a very toxic plant common in Alaska, and this first recipe was something he called Dr. Tuggle's Compound Syrup of Globe Flower. A few more years pass with the success of selling a huge range of products, and in 1869, John is ready to expand and take the business to the next level outside of Columbus, Georgia, and he moves to the larger city of his home state, Atlanta, Georgia. In 1884, John made a drink based on a European brand of drink called Vin Mariana, made by a Parisian chemist, Angelo Mariani, in 1863. Pemberton, he started a booming business making a version he called Pemberton's French Wine Coca, which the difference was he started adding extracts from tropical plants from South America, such as cola nuts, to bring aphrodisiac properties to the drink. French wine coca is an alcoholic drink mixed with coca, cola nut, and damiana. The drink contained cocaethylene, which was cocaine mixed with alcohol. So John, he took his version of French wine coca, and he marketed it as a medicine and a panacea, which is named after a Greek goddess of universal remedy, and it's a fantasy basically marketed to make people believe that it's going to remedy and clear all illnesses and prolong life indefinitely. And then John also went a step further and is quoted saying that Pemberton's French wine coca is, quote, a most wonderful invigorator of sexual organs, end quote. And then he claimed the drink, it would benefit upper-class citizens on high-strung nerves brought on by urbanization and impotence, among other ailments, saying this will help scientists, scholars, poets, divines, lawyers, physicians, and others devoted to extreme mental exertion. He also suggested that this was a cure for morphine addiction as well. So throughout 1884 to early 1886, Pemberton's French wine Coca was a widely successful hit and was very addictive due to, you guessed it, cocaine being one of the ingredients. But John was working on something off to the side because in November of 1885, Fulton County, the county that Atlanta, Georgia is in, it was announced that by July 1st, 1886, it was going to be a dry county prohibiting all alcoholic beverages. So late 1885 through spring 1886, John Pemberton scrambled to find a way to make and sell his drink, Pemberton's French wine Coca, without alcohol. Not without cocaine, just without alcohol. John, he was experimenting all around his house, but he finally came up with a syrup, and he cured it and ripened it in his own home, and he was blending coca extract with kola nuts, sorghum, and other ingredients to create a medicinal brown but sweet syrup. So Pemberton, he finishes the final touches on this syrup, that is the non-alcoholic version of Pemberton's French wine coca, and he takes the syrup to Atlanta's Jacobs Pharmacy to sell and for the pharmacy's owner to experiment with, test, come up with a way to prepare the beverage. And this was on May 8th, 1886, when Coca-Cola was born and started being served. The original way Coca-Cola was served at this time isn't the way that you think, where you get a bottle out and you just glug glug drink it. The way Coca-Cola was prepared at this time was you took the syrup and you mixed it with just water. Just straight water. And it was sold as a medicine over the counter in pharmacies for 5 cents a pop. And how Coca-Cola came to be a soda and a drink was pretty much by accident, actually. One day a pharmacist, he accidentally put carbonated soda water in the syrup instead of regular water. And he gave it to a customer, and the customer tried it, and hey, this is actually really good, you know? And there we go. Coca-Cola, as we know it, was born. So now they realize we're going to serve Coca-Cola as a drink, not a medicine. And so John had this bookkeeper named Frank Robinson. Frank Robinson is a new business partner with John that John took on to help with advertising this new drink. At the time, they didn't know what they were going to call this drink. So Frank had this idea to call it Coca-Cola, taking the two active ingredients in the drink and putting it in the name, much like a lot of medicines at the time were being named. Robinson thought with the name with two C's in it just looked good too. So as Robinson was good with bookkeeping and the art of writing, he then wrote out the name Coca-Cola in Spencerian script style, and that became the logo that is still in use today. So now as this quote-unquote medicine was being made and served with carbonated water, John, he went on to market the drink as, quote, valuable brain tonic that would cure headaches, relieve exhaustion, and calm nerves. And it was also marketed as delicious, refreshing, pure joy, invigorating, and exhilarating. There was also the early slogan, Coca-Cola, the temperance drink. Let's get into the deal with the whole cocaine in Coca-Cola. So you've wondered, you know, hey, I kind of heard this thing, there's cocaine in Coca-Cola, is that still in the drink, or what's going on? Okay, here's the deal.
It's Industrial Industries World Radio's debut album, Songs and Skits of Seasons 1 and 2. All the songs you heard in the episodes are all here, like the uplifting It's Gonna Be Okay. Hey, 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 it's gonna be okay. Check out the hot and hip Rap Song 2020.
Wiener Balls, Rap Song 2020, Rap Song 2020.
And don't forget the classic hit, Fart in Your Face.
I wanna fart on the guitar, I wanna fart on the power bill, I wanna fart on fresh fruit, I wanna fart in
the best songs and skits from the first two seasons of IIWR are right here, Industrial Industries World Radio's Songs and Skits of Seasons 1 and 2. Check it out on Spotify, iTunes, and anywhere else you can stream and download music.
In 1886, when Coca-Cola was created, it was common for most medicines to have cocaine in them, or some certain amount, some traces, you know. And back then, people had no idea that it could be harmful. And the coca in the Coca-Cola was because it was one of the active ingredients, and it was meant to be a medicinal tonic in the first place instead of a drink. So the coca extract from the coca leaves, that's what was needed to be in the coca of Coca-Cola. So when the perception of cocaine turned bad in the late 1890s, because cocaine was becoming an idea that, oh, it's a very addictive drug. We didn't know about this until now. They didn't want to drop using the coca extract because, I mean, that it's all in the name. But in 1902, from the cause of the rise of cocaine epidemics, the state of Georgia banned cocaine, with the exception of therapeutic use. So the line was a bit blurry with Coca-Cola using it because, hey, we're a medicinal thing, so it's therapeutic, you know. So they were able to still keep on using it. But with this happening, they realized, okay, we need to cut back and find a way to still use the coca extract without having the traces of cocaine in it. And as we go through this timeline, I'm going to tell you when exactly Coca-Cola cut any traces of cocaine in it to where it was cocaine-free. We'll go on from there. But going back now, we're now at May 29th, 1886, and the first ad for Coca-Cola was placed in the Atlanta Journal. 1887, a whole year Coca-Cola has been out, and there wasn't much interest in it. Contrary to popular belief, Coca-Cola, its first year out there in the public, was a complete flop. It failed. John saw it as a complete failure because it cost him $70 to make it. And the first year Coca-Cola being out on the market brought in only $50. So he took a loss of $20 the first year. But Frank Robinson, the bookkeeper, the logo maker, he said, wait, no, you just need to market it. All you need is some exposure, and this thing's gonna get big, I promise you. So Frank persuaded John to put a large amount of money into advertising the drink and putting in ads everywhere, banners on awnings outside of businesses saying, drink Coca-Cola. Because at the time, people would see Coca-Cola and think, I don't know what Coca-Cola is. So put drink Coca-Cola so they know, oh, it's a drink. Okay. So all across Atlanta, there were streetcars, awnings, banners everywhere saying drink Coca-Cola in its very early years of advertising. So June 28th, 1887, John is finally seeing Coca-Cola pick up some steam now with advertising going on. Okay, I'll file a trademark. So he files a trademark for the name Coca-Cola in June 28th, 1887. Also in that same year, the prohibition on alcohol ended, so John went back to making French wine coca as well. John Pemberton, he fell ill to stomach cancer, and he was pretty much broke and on the verge of being bankrupt due to his morphine addiction that he was never able to cure. So John, to keep himself afloat, he sold the rights to his formula to business partners in Atlanta. And he held on to some of the rights, still thinking the drink could be a success, even though it was only selling 9 glasses a day. Hey, maybe. So John, even back then, he still had some hope for Coca-Cola, hoping to keep it in the family for his son, for his grandchildren, so on and so forth. But seeing as John's son wanted money instead, both John and his son Charlie sold the remaining rights and the patent of the formula of Coca-Cola to another Atlanta pharmacist, Asa Griggs Candler, for $1,750, which by today's money from inflation, it's about $47,000. So, yeah, talk about shooting yourself in the foot, huh? So now there are three people out there now who own the rights to use the Coca-Cola formula. Not the name. So that's the thing. Charles Pemberton still owned the Coca-Cola name. March 1888, John files a patent to incorporate Coca-Cola into the first version that would be the Coca-Cola company. And months later, in August 1888, at the age of 57, John Stith Pemberton passed away from stomach cancer and was buried in Linwood Cemetery in Columbus, Georgia. John's son, Charlie Pemberton, still owning the name Coca-Cola, he was a pain in Asa Candler's side, as Asa owned one-third of the rights to Coca-Cola since being sold to him in 1887. He still couldn't sell the drink he partially owned as Coca-Cola. Even though he made a better-tasting version than what Charlie was making, he still couldn't call it Coca-Cola, so he came up with other names for it like Yum Yum and Coke with K's instead of C's. These names just didn't catch on. So he was after the name Coca-Cola, you know, that marketing power that is the brand Coca-Cola. So as soon as Asa had the chance to buy out the rights from everybody else, he did. He knew Coca-Cola needed to be in better hands, and he wound up buying the exclusive rights to Coca-Cola shortly after. And by August 30th, 1888, Asa Candler had complete control of the Coca-Cola name. Candler also bought out the other owners who had the rights to use the formula. And now in 1889, Candler claims full ownership of Coca-Cola. 1891, as cocaine is now being seen as a habit-forming drug, and it's getting a bad reputation in the eyes of the public at large, chemists at Coca-Cola started working on a formula to use less of the coca leaves to still make the drink. But Candler, still believing in the benefits of the coca leaf, they still left a tiny trace in it. 1892, it is legit, and Candler founds the Coca-Cola Company and trademarks the brand. 1894, it's the first year Coca-Cola is being put in glass bottles, and it's done in Vicksburg, Mississippi for the first time at the Biedenhorn Candy Company. Now, these bottles weren't the Coke bottles that you see today. They were Hutchison bottles with a weird bottle stopper with a wire on top you'd have to take off in the place of a bottle cap. 1895, Coca-Cola is being distributed nationwide in the United States of America, being advertised as a drink that relieved mental and physical fatigue and cured headaches. Candler also made up the famous $1 contract, which gave the rights to bottle Coca-Cola to bottling companies for only $1, which was a smart move because it helped the drink get widely distributed throughout the country. 1899, Coca-Cola gets shipped and sold to Cuba for the first time. 1902, the amount of cocaine now being put in Coca-Cola was 1/400th. Of a grain per ounce of syrup. And also in 1902, Coca-Cola is now being exported to Europe. 1903, with cocaine really looking bad in the public eye, Candler took the cocaine component out of the coca leaves before turning it into Coca-Cola syrup. A little bit over a decade passes, and in 1915, the hobble skirt design of the Coke bottles everyone knows and loves sees its first introduction to the world, created by the Root Glass Company. And a little fun fact about the Coca-Cola-shaped bottle is that the prototype version of the bottle, the middle was huge, very, very wide, but then they slimmed it down. Just a little
fun fact for you.
1916, Candler becomes the mayor of Atlanta, and he gives all of his shares of Coca-Cola to his children. 1917, Coca-Cola reduces the amount of caffeine in the drink by 50%. And September 12th, 1919, It's corporate time, ladies and gentlemen. Coca-Cola is bought out completely by investors for $25 million and becomes a publicly traded company offering 500,000 shares at $40 each. 1929, with advancements and more money for technology able to get all the traces out, Coca-Cola was now completely cocaine-free. Yep, fun times over. Now we get to 1931, and I want to say Coca-Cola, they have basically shaped America in a lot of different ways than we even know. Santa Claus, for instance, okay? Santa Claus before 1931, there was all these different versions of how he looked like. There's the German Santa Claus, the Swedish Santa Claus, the Irish one, however you want to look at him. But Coca-Cola in 1931, they commissioned an artist, Haddon Sunbaum, to do paintings for advertisements for Coca-Cola. For Christmas, he started painting the Coca-Cola Santa Claus. And Sunbaum's inspiration for this version of Santa Claus was from the 1822 poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas. It's also known as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. And this painted Santa in the picture of the very jolly, all dressed in red, plump Santa that we all see, the big black belt going over his tummy and all of that. So it was Coca-Cola back in 1931 having this artist paint up Santa how he envisioned it that gave Santa Claus this image that we see in American culture and worldwide culture today. It all came from Coca-Cola in their advertisements. Skip 10 more years, and in 1941, it's World War II. The German Coca-Cola branch, due to the war, it was impossible to get ingredients to make Coca-Cola to Germany. So Max Keith, the head of Coca-Cola's German office, he created a new product for the German market called Fanta. It was short for the word fantasy. So using ingredients readily available in Germany is just kind of whatever they could find, really. Beet sugar, whey, byproduct of cheese, and apple pomace. And, you know, just very bottom of the bottom of barrel kind of ingredients. It could be used to make this drink. And it became a hit, though, but not in the way as people would buy bottles of this to drink. No, instead, since sugar was rationed in Germany, they would use bottles of Fanta to sweeten up their soups or their stews and all that kind of stuff, what have you. But then after the war, Coca-Cola reunited with the German branch and Fanta became a much larger brand. July 12th, 1944, the 1 billionth gallon of Coca-Cola syrup is made. 1955, Coca-Cola becomes available in a can for the first time. 1959 is the last and final year where Coca-Cola is available on its fixed price of 5 cents. 1961, the clear lemon-lime soda Sprite is introduced in the U.S. market, but it was developed in Germany in 1959 as Clear Lemon Fanta. And Sprite was used to compete against 7-Up, which was also a clear lemon-lime citrus soda. 1986, big things happened as the Coca-Cola Company merged with two of their bottling operators to form Coca-Cola Enterprises Incorporated. Yeah, very corporate, very exciting, right? Yeah. And in 1990, the world of Coca-Cola opened its doors, serving as a museum of all things Coca-Cola in Atlanta, Georgia. Skipping ahead 17 years, and in 2007, the original world of Coca-Cola closed and reopened the same year in a different building, which had new features such as a 4D movie, and visitors could taste over 60 different flavors from around the world. There's also a museum featuring the exhibit about the secret formula of Coca-Cola as well. In 2009, Coca-Cola started testing out a touchscreen soda fountain called the Coca-Cola Freestyle in Utah, Southern California, and Georgia, which this soda fountain had one single fountain, and the customer could choose from up to 165 different Coca-Cola products. The Coca-Cola Freestyle became such a huge success that it's now expanded nationwide and into other parts of the world. So as we wrap everything up and we look at where we stand now with Coca-Cola, they have over 3,900 beverage choices and over 500 brands. Still selling today, still as popular as ever, and the company is worth over $80 billion at the moment. So Coca-Cola, it's going to be a beverage company that will be serving people for generations and generations to come. And that is your history of Coca-Cola. Alright, now comes the time where we check out all the flavors of Coca-Cola, all the different ones that have come out over the years. Now, these are just flavors of Coca-Cola. We're going to get into everything else that Coca-Cola owns in the 10 list. So, this is just strictly the flavors of Coca-Cola. So, obviously, in 1886, the original Coca-Cola came out. 1921, this ain't really a different flavor, but just a different variation where Coca-Cola started being bottled in Mexico, and Mexico used cane sugar as sweetener. Now, this wasn't really a big deal for American Coke either until the 1980s when in the U.S. they used high fructose corn syrup instead of cane sugar to sweeten up Coca-Cola. But Mexico didn't switch up their ingredients. And Coca-Cola from Mexico, it's often called Mexican Coke or Mexicoke, and it usually comes in glass bottles and is hugely popular in the U.S. and preferred if it's available. We jump a lot of years, but a lot of other different soda brands came out over these years. But in 1982, we have Diet Coke. It hits the market and becomes the largest selling low-calorie soda in America. 1983, caffeine-free Coca-Cola comes out. 1985, Cherry Coke, which is Coca-Cola with cherry flavor, obviously. And it was originally marketed as Cherry Coke, but in North America in 2006, they changed it to Coca-Cola Cherry. Huge difference, I know. Also in 1985, they came out with New Coke. We're going to skip that for now. We're going to move on. 2001, we have Golden Coca-Cola. It was a limited edition version of Coca-Cola. The flavor was about the same. It was just the cans, where these cans were printed in gold and red with patterns of athletes and famous Chinese buildings and fireworks, all that kind of stuff. Also in 2001, we have Coca-Cola with lemon. Then in 2002, we have Vanilla Coke. And it lasted till 2005 and got discontinued for a little bit. And then it picked back up in 2007 and it was renamed Coca-Cola Vanilla. And in 2005, we have Coca-Cola with lime. Also in 2005, we have Coca-Cola Raspberry. And Coca-Cola with Raspberry was only out for that year, and then it was discontinued for a little bit, and then came back in 2009. 2006, Coca-Cola Citra. It was only available in Japan, and it had a citrus taste to Coca-Cola. Also in 2006, we have Coca-Cola Black Cherry Vanilla. And this flavor filled the void that Vanilla Coke left. Coca-Cola's trying to switch it up, put some fruit in with the vanilla. And I guess it just didn't go over that well because it got discontinued in 2007. And Coca-Cola brought back just Vanilla Coca-Cola in 2007. Then also in 2006, Coca-Cola Black came out. It was Coca-Cola with a rich coffee flavor. And it was discontinued a couple years later in 2008. Moving on to 2007, we have Coca-Cola Orange. And it was available in the United Kingdom and Gibraltar for a limited time. Also in 2007, we have Diet Coke Citrus Zest. It was a combination of lemon and lime flavors sold in the UK, and it disappeared sometime in 2018. Moving on to 2013, we have Coca-Cola Life. Had a green label, and it was a version of Coca-Cola with stevia sugar as the sweetener. Then in 2016, we have Coca-Cola Ginger, which was a mixture of Coca-Cola with the taste of ginger beer, and it was available in Australia and New Zealand. 2018, we have Coca-Cola Clear. It was a clear diet version of Coca-Cola with lemon flavoring to make up for the lack of caramel color. It was first available in Japan in June 2018. Also in this same year, Coca-Cola switched up their Diet Coke line to include fruity versions of Diet Coke with five different flavors such as Twisted Mango, Zesty Blood Orange, Feisty Cherry, and Ginger Lime. 2019, Coca-Cola Orange Vanilla came out. It was a twist of orange and vanilla in Coca-Cola, and it was made to taste like an orange creamsicle. Also, we have Coca-Cola Energy, which was just an energy drink with a flavor that tasted like Coca-Cola. And during the summertime, the Japan-only release, we have Coca-Cola Apple. Towards the holiday season of 2019, we have Coca-Cola Cinnamon. It was a limited edition flavor for the 2019 holidays. And now, expanding our horizons, in 2020, we've got a brand new flavor that Coca-Cola put out. It's Coca-Cola Cherry Vanilla, and it was released in the United States on February 10th, 2020. So that is the bulk of all the different flavors that Coca-Cola has. So, all right, let's get out of here.
Industrial Industries World Radio.
All right, so we went over some of the flavors Coca-Cola had, some of the products Coca-Cola has, but we still need to touch upon one thing. It's probably the most famous commercial flop Coca-Cola put out, and it goes by the little name New Coke. So to give you a backstory of what was going on during the 1970s between Pepsi and Coke, they had something called the Cola Wars, and, you know, they were doing taste tests. Which tastes better, Coca-Cola or Pepsi? And it seemed like a lot of people were preferring Pepsi over Coke. So in order to boost sales, Coca-Cola put out this new thing called New Coke, or Coke 2. And they were like, this is a new formula, it's new and improved and all this. So New Coke came from something that was a project called Project Kansas. And it was headed by Marketing Vice President Sergio Zimon and Coca-Cola U.S. President Brian Dyson to create a new flavor for Coke. And so they made this new flavor of Coke. And from taste tests, 88% of people said they liked the sweeter taste than regular Coke or Pepsi had. So it was an overwhelming majority. People in the taste testing stage loved New Coke, but there was the 12%, they were actually wildly vocal and angry about it. Like, why are you changing up the flavor? And from this anger, from just the 12%, it kind of spoiled the 88% to think, oh, okay, well, I guess we don't like this either if you're that mad about it, you know? And besides just that one big taste test, they also had taste tests in other places that had, like, widely positive results. So all these positive results pushed Coca-Cola to use this new formula. Initially, Coca-Cola had this idea where they're gonna still keep the original and then put in New Coke. But with Diet Coke coming out in 1982 and Cherry Coke in 1985, they didn't want to confuse customers by putting out another flavor, and then, oh, you know, so they decided to just switch up Coca-Cola altogether and replace it completely with New Coke. Coca-Cola's CEO described New Coke as bolder, rounder, and more harmonious. They're giving away thousands of cans of New Coke in New York City, Washington, D.C.'s Lafayette Park, and then it soon after went into every soda fountain in McDonald's and to the rest of the world. New Coke was here. Three-fourths of people who tasted New Coke said they'd buy New Coke again, and it seemed that New Coke was being bought just as much as the original, and actually sales went up 8% that year. So despite the fact that it was really big in the Northeast, the failure of New Coke started when the Southeast United States, where Coca-Cola came from, they saw Coca-Cola as their identity, you know, something to be proud of. And more northern people liking Pepsi, a lot of the southerners saw New Coke as the taste of Pepsi, or they saw it that they were trying to change up the brand and change something new, much like Pepsi's like the new age kind of Coca-Cola, you know, the next generation. The southerners, they saw it as yet another surrender, tying back all the way from the Civil War. So they didn't like this at all. They wanted their original Coke from back in the day, and that's it. So with all this anger, Coke received 40,000 calls and letters from people expressing their hate for New Coke. It was an average of 1,500 calls a day were made complaining about the soda. Workers at Coke had said some of these people on the end of the line were just so upset, they were talking like there was a death in the family. It went to the point where Coke hired a psychologist to listen back to some of these phone calls because it was just that crazy. There was one letter sent to Coca-Cola asking for the CEO of Coca-Cola's autograph because, quote, a signature from one of the dumbest executives in American business history would likely become valuable later on in the future. So New Coke seemed to be trashed mostly because it was new and cool and hip, much like how Pepsi always advertised their soda. Fans would boo when New Coke advertisements would show up on the scoreboards at the Houston Astros game. It also became a punching bag and a running joke for TV personalities Johnny Carson and David Letterman. One guy, he took it as far as to form the Old Cola Drinkers of America, and he filed a lawsuit against Coca-Cola that got dismissed. And a funny little story about this guy is that in two blind taste tests, he couldn't tell the difference between New Coke and regular Coke. And actually, he expressed a preference for New Coke. He just didn't know it. So it's like, come on, guys, get with the times. So except for the South, where it was getting trashed left and right, New Coke did very well everywhere else in the country. But the people who did like New Coke, they kind of folded under peer pressure from everybody trashing it on a national scale. It was like New Coke was kind of like a guilty pleasure that, you know, is a hidden thing. You shouldn't be spoken about it. Yeah, I like the taste, but, you know, you got to keep the image up and whatever. And the president of Coca-Cola, he was at his country club one point, and he heard someone say that they liked New Coke, but they said, quote, I'll be damned if I'll let Coca-Cola know that. So while bottlers were applauding Coke for standing up to Pepsi during the Cola Wars, they were now concerned because people were protesting it. They were taking full bottles and pouring it down the drains in cities all across America. It was crazy. There was also another issue with Coke and their pricing policies with their syrup. So with that and the pressure from all the protests, Coke decided that it was time to cut New Coke and go back to the original formula. So on July 11th, 1985, just 79 days after New Coke was introduced, Coca-Cola executives announced the return of the original formula, and the old Coca-Cola came back as Coca-Cola Classic. But that's not where the story ends with New Coke. In 1990, New Coke continued to be test marketed under the new name Coke 2. And in 1992, Coke 2 hit store shelves nationally. It got little to no promotion. And about a year later, Coke 2 was taken off store shelves, at least on a national scale. So it tinkered on, and by 1998, Coke 2 was found only in small markets in the Northwest, the Midwest, and some overseas territories. Now Coke 2 kind of dragged on a little bit more until July 2002, where Coca-Cola announced that Coke 2 would be discontinued entirely. Now, New Coke stuck its head out a little bit. More recently, May 21st, 2019, Coca-Cola announced that New Coke would be relaunched for a very limited time promotional run. It was to promote the third season of the TV show Stranger Things as part of a deal with Netflix. So about 500,000 cans of New Coke was produced for this promotion, and it was only available online when you bought the limited edition Stranger Things box. And this box included a Stranger Things edition bottle of original Coke, a Stranger Things edition of Coke Zero, and two cans of New Coke. And I gotta tell you, I actually bought a case and did try a can of New Coke. So I could say I have had New Coke. And what could I tell you from what I remember is it tasted actually really good. I do prefer New Coke over regular Coke because it's more of a smoother taste. It is sweeter. So I actually prefer it. And I hate the fact that it's not out on store shelves now, but that's that. So there you go, guys. That is everything and anything that you ever needed to know about New Coke. All right, everybody, gather around, because now it is fun fact time. You like fun facts? I like fun facts. So let's get into some Coca-Cola fun facts. John Pemberton, you know, the guy who created Coca-Cola, his labs from the 1800s were state of the art, and they remain in use today as a soil and crop chemical testing facility for the Georgia Department of Agriculture. Yeah. In the 1880s, former U.S. President Ulysses S. Grant claimed he drank Pemberton's French wine coca to fight a painful throat cancer. In the countries outside of the U.S. and Canada, Diet Coke is labeled and sold as Coca-Cola Light. Before Surge hit the market in the U.S. in 1997, Coca-Cola in Norway released a citrus soda that had the same look and label and taste as Surge, but it was called Urge, without the S. It was discontinued in Norway in 2001. The longest-running commercial Coca-Cola soda fountain anywhere was in Atlanta's Fleeman's Pharmacy, which first opened its doors in 1914, and Jack Fleeman took over the pharmacy from his father and ran it until 1995, closing it after 81 years. A typical can of Coca-Cola, 12 ounces, has 38 grams of sugar, 50 milligrams of sodium, 0 grams of fat, 0 grams of potassium, and 140 calories. On May 5th, 2014, Coca-Cola said it's working to remove a controversial ingredient, brominated vegetable oil, from all of their drinks. The exact formula of Coca-Cola's natural flavorings is a trade secret, and it's locked up tight. While we're on the subject, the original copy of the formula was held in SunTrust Bank's main vault in Atlanta for 86 years. And on December 8th, 2011, the original secret formula was moved to a new vault, which is on display for visitors at its World of Coca-Cola Museum in Atlanta. Since 2012, Coca-Cola has been officially available in every country in the world except Cuba and North Korea. However, Coca-Cola is still available in both countries, just sold unofficially, on the down low. There is an official Coca-Cola cookbook where Coca-Cola is used as one of the ingredients in anything from turkeys to waffles to even lasagna. Very early on, the drink Sprite had a mascot named Sprite Boy. Coca-Cola Freestyle machines have a hidden menu known as Crew Mode, used to check cartridge levels and as an entry point for the password-protected service menu. And your final fun fact for Coca-Cola, 1.8 billion Coke drinks are produced every day. And that's your fun facts for Coca-Cola. Woo! So fun!
The 10 list.
Welcome everybody to the 10 list, where we take a look at 10 things and we keep it as simple as that. And today we are looking at drink brands owned by Coca-Cola. Number 10, Barq's Root Beer. First introduced in 1898, Barq's Root Beer being unique since it's a root beer that does contain caffeine, stayed as its own identity until Coca-Cola bought Barq's in 1995. Number 9 is Surge. The more hardcore-styled citrus soda, Surge originally released in 1997 and then discontinued in 2003, but it has since made a comeback, popping up in gas stations in the U.S. and currently on tap in the Coca-Cola Freestyle machines in Burger King restaurants. Number 8, Vault Soda. Released in 2005, it was referred to as a soda energy drink hybrid. With its citrus flavor and yellowish-green color, its slogan was, "Drinks like soda, kicks like an energy drink." There was also a red berry flavor named Red Blitz. Vault was discontinued in 2011. Number 7. Tab. Released in 1963, Tab is a Diet Cola drink that became widely popular until Diet Coke came out in 1982. It also expanded into fruit, root beer, and ginger ale flavors as well. Tab is still available today in some parts of the United States, Canada, Norway, the Virgin Islands, and Spain. Number 6, Mellow Yellow. Introduced in 1979, the caffeinated citrus-flavored soda was made to compete with Pepsi's Mountain Dew, as there is also a cherry version of Mellow Yellow to compete with Mountain Dew Code Red. Number 5, Mr. Pibb. To compete with Dr. Pepper, Coca-Cola released the first version of Mr. Pibb as Peppo in 1972. After Dr. Pepper sued Coca-Cola for trademark infringement, Coca-Cola changed the name to Mr. Pibb in 1974, and it was labeled with having a new taste. Then in 2001, adding cinnamon to the soda, Mr. Pibb was once again renamed as Pibb Extra. Number 4, Minute Maid Juice. First founded in 1945, created at the tail end of World War II, the juice company found itself in the business of making powdered orange juice and became successful enough for Coca-Cola to want to buy them out in 1960. Number 3, Powerade. Introduced in 1988, Powerade was made to compete with Pepsi's popular sports drink, Gatorade. In its history of having over 30 different flavors, one of the discontinued flavors was Matrix Reloaded flavor, which later became the flavor of Black Cherry Lime. Number 2, OK Soda. First test marketed in 1993, it was made to appeal to the Generation Xers with its weird advertising and odd way the soda cans looked, with upside-down text and graphic artsy illustrations. It was given the name OK Soda, as Coca-Cola saw that the word Coke was the second most recognizable word in the world. And right above Coke was the word OK. With OK Soda trying to be targeted towards the younger audience, they tried to be cool in saying that, hey, this soda isn't the greatest soda, it's just OK. Being test marketed in 19 cities across the US from 1993 through 1995, it was known to have a citrus mixed with cola taste, but it was also referred to as a drink called swamp water, where someone would take their cup to a soda fountain and fill their cup up with every flavor at the fountain. OK Soda never made it out of test marketing and was discontinued in 1995. And at number 1, we have Sprite. First available in 1961, the clear lemon-lime soda was made in competition to the soda 7-Up. Sprite has since become widely popular, as there are several versions of the soda with over 20 flavors of the drink. And that is your 10 list of drink brands owned by Coca-Cola. If you want more of the 10 list, Just keep it locked right here on IIWR. As this episode of Industrial Industries World Radio comes to a close, I don't think you're ever going to be able to take a look at a can of Coke the same way again. I think you know too much now. And it's for the better. You get to know how these companies start out, what it took, all the grit, all the hard times. And hey, if you're ever feeling down, You started out some business venture, like say a podcast, and you have nobody listening to you, just realize, hey, Coca-Cola only sold like $50 worth of stuff in its first year. It's always good to hear these stories. I always feel like it. And hey, if you ever get a chance to check out some new Coke and drink some, I highly recommend it. For this episode, I'd like to thank Kimmy Pops for voiceover work, Giuliano for graphic design, and I also like to thank you for listening. If you want to get a hold of me, you could always email me at industrialindustriesworldradio@gmail.com. You can find my Facebook, and I do have an Instagram now, so I'm big in the world now of social media. I finally hunkered down, got myself an Instagram, so if you want to follow me on there, I don't check it too much, but when I find something that I think is worthwhile of putting up, I'll do it. And yeah, so there's plenty of ways you can get a hold of me if you have any questions, comments, concerns, ideas, what have you. I am there. Okay. If you want to check out the YouTube channel, you can check it out. Go to YouTube, type in Industrial Industries World Radio. I should pop up. I got way too many videos on my channel, but hey, they're still all worthwhile, and I would suggest you checking them out when you feel bored. They're definitely time killers, that's for sure. So anyways, closing things up, this was episode 26 of Industrial Industries World Radio, and I am your host, DJ Glowing Ice, wanting to wish you a very happy rest of your week. Stay safe, have a great week, have a good day, and I will see you next week for another fun-filled adventure here at Industrial Industries World Radio. Till then, peace out, guys.
Next time on Industrial Industries World Radio.